This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Linmark Sharitz Abdullah and Wong Xiao Ning. Now, we have a poll running on the BFM Twitter. We're asking you, do GDP growth numbers matter to you? Tell us what you think. Please head over to the Twitter at BFM Radio and vote. Your options are yes, no, it's more complicated, and I'm not sure. We want to know what you think, so be sure to let us know. Now, in the meantime, the stock rebound continues as solid earnings from Cisco and Walmart, along with strong housing data, boosted shares. In the US, the S&P 500 rose 0.9%, the Nasdaq was up 1%, and the Dow Jones rose 0.8% on the biggest mover here, which was Cisco. That stock jumped 6.6%.
And on the back of a forecast that beat the street expectations. At the same time, news on Pinterest share dropped more than 50% in after-hour trading after the company reported larger losses than expected. And this is in its first quarterly, this is their first quarterly earnings report since its IPO. So shares closed up at 7.8% at just under $31, but it tumbled after-hour trade. Pinterest reported a net loss of $41 million on revenue of about $202 million.
But Pinterest is actually up since its IPO because it went public last month at $19 per share. Now, on other news...
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The business station.
News and Nvidia stock rallied after big earnings beat, 7% after market hours, but has since come back and it's only just up 1%. Now, this is a graphics chip maker. It reported earnings that beat Wall Street estimates, although revenue for this company's second largest segment, data centers, fell short of expectations.
Yesterday, Nvidia reported a first quarter net income of $394 million compared to $1.2 billion a year ago, and revenue also fell to $2.2 billion from $3.2 billion last year. The revenue from their data centers, which is Nvidia's second largest business segment, that fell 10% to $634 million on year. With analysts pulled by Factsheet having expected data center sales to decrease by about 5%, so that 10% decrease far beat analyst expectations. Baidu as well. Baidu has posted their earnings, and they've seen a loss for the first time since going public in 2005. And they are China's biggest online search service. They are basically the Google of China. And they've been grappling with rising costs as well as slowing sales in a weakening economy.
So Baidu's American depository receipts fell more than 7% in extending trading. The board has authorized a new $1 billion stock buyback program. In the meantime, their revenue rose 15% to about 24 billion yuan. But the company saw a net loss of about 327 million yuan, which is about $48 million, and we're looking at an average estimate which was 187 million yuan.
So the results were very below market, and I think the issue facing Baidu, which is a 19-year-old internet company, is how does it stay relevant in the mobile era? Mm-hmm. Right, it's sinking billions into new technology. It's got artificial intelligence, self-driving cars, but the question is, how do you attract young smartphone users and to its apps to keep ad revenue growing?
Yeah, so their loss was then also partially fueled by escalating costs in content and marketing. And quite interesting, Baidu controls about 70% of China's online search market, obviously because Western players are not allowed to pass the Great Firewall of China.
Unless you have a virtual...
A VPN, I think.
VPN. Yeah, private network.
Now, another Chinese company in the news is Huawei. So earnings aside, trade tensions remained in the background as Trump administration threatened to blacklist China's Huawei technologies. And in response, Huawei has said that it will challenge a decision by the U.S. Commerce Department to add them to an export blacklist, warning the decision will do significant economic harm to American companies with which Huawei does business. So the decision by the Commerce Department to add the Huawei and 70 affiliates to its so-called entity list bans them from buying parts and components from U.S. companies without U.S. government approval. We've also got news out of the U.K.
Yes, that's right. So the British Prime Minister, Theresa May, elsewhere. Now, she is Well, the pound. Well, she is facing new threats, and this is to oust her. And May has agreed to setting a timeline for her departure. But this now raises fear that the UK may again have a new prime minister before it sets to leave the EU on October 31st. So, this in light of this, the pound dropped for a ninth day versus the euro, the longest losing streak since 2000.
So, on the line to tell us more about global markets, we have Carlos Casanova, chief Asia economist at COFAS in Hong Kong. Thanks for joining us, Carlos. China cut its US Treasury's holdings to the lowest level since 2017 in March to $10.4 billion. Are they doing this to prop up the depreciating yuan, or are they just firing a warning shot to the US government considering recent trade tariffs, since China's the largest foreign holder of a US government debt? What are your thoughts?
Good morning. So we currently do not believe that the decline in treasuries in China as a result of the ongoing trade war. I mean, for starters, the data was actually collected before the latest deterioration in the bilateral relationship was announced. But also, China is the largest owner of U.S. treasuries, and increasing the yield engineering an increase in the yield of U.S. treasuries would also affect the value of China's portfolio. So there's always comments about utilizing its U.S. treasuries to hit the U.S., but unfortunately, I don't think that this is what we are observing right now. I think this sell-off in U.S. treasuries by China is a result of two main things. First of all, as you rightly mentioned, the U.N. has experienced pressure. And this is the biggest sort of sell-off since 2017, when the U.N. also experienced a lot of depreciatory pressure. So they are using the U.S. Treasuries to purchase their yuan and perk up the value of the currency. But the other thing that we're seeing is that, of course, this larger accumulation in treasuries is a result of China's huge trade surplus with the U.S. However, we have seen some pressures on the export front, and China is now expected to have a small current account deficit. So normally we would see a decline in their ability to purchase U.S. treasuries as a result of this imbalance correcting slightly.
Now, Carlos, more on China. Their retail sales growth fell to a 16-year low of 7.2% year-on-year, while industrial production growth fell to 5.4% year-on-year in April 2019. So fixed asset investment growth also moderated to 6.1% in the year-on-year in the fourth month in April 2019. So what do you make of this data?
Yeah, so the data is actually quite in line with what we were expecting. If you smooth the data out and you look at the year-to-date figures, it shows a gradual decline in activity in the Chinese economy. And this is in line with what we're saying. Basically, that the Chinese economy was slowing even before the U.S. started slapping tariffs on their exports. So I would view it as a return to this gradual deceleration trend. Analysts were a little bit too positive following from March data outturns, because those were very, very positive, and they resulted in a Q1 GDP surprise. And a lot of this was on the back of fiscal stimulus. So a lot of investors did overestimate the size of the stimulus package and became a little bit too bullish. Now we see that this decline is back on the table, and so we do foresee that the economy will continue to slow down a little bit in the remainder of the year, especially if the trade war negotiations don't go well.
So, Carlos, with a decelerating Chinese economy, does this mean that more stimulus will be needed in the second half of 2019? And what kind of policy measures can we expect from the Chinese government then?
So this deceleration does indeed mean more stimulus in the remainder of the year. We've seen so far fiscal policy stimulus being the main tool that they've been utilizing, especially as they sort of anticipated that some form of trade deal would be reached in the first half of the year. But they've now maxed out about half of the year's quota for local government bond issuance and local government financing vehicles, which are two of the main tools that are used to finance infrastructure at local level. This will continue to be a factor in the second quarter, but we do expect it to taper off slightly as they run out of space in the second half, which means, of course, that they will resort to more monetary policy easing in the form of injecting more liquidity in the market, but also allowing faster growth in monetary aggregates, for example, in M2 growth will be higher than perhaps it was in the first half of the year.
Thank you so much. And that was Carlos Casanova of COFAS out of Hong Kong, weighing in on with his thoughts on the Chinese economy. And he thinks that we're going to be seeing more stimulus from the Chinese government in the remainder of the year. All right, we'll be coming back with more local news for you after this. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.